The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much. Post-4th of July edition. Hopefully you had a great 4th of July. I did. Out on the south side of Bloomington, we had a nice gathering of individuals, people in their cars, people in my driveway, people on my berm, people in my backyard, safely socially distancing, had plenty of space for that. And we boomed off some fireworks. And I was like, this is a record, you know, thing going on here, man. But you know, no one had anything else to do but come over and watch fireworks. So we didn't offer any food, any drinks, no COVID coolers going on at my house. Just come hang out, watch the show, and go from there. So hopefully everyone that was on the south side of Bloomington that saw those enjoyed them. I enjoy letting them off. I enjoy people enjoying them. And that's the end of the story. We let off some Chinese lanterns, too, that flew kind of southeast. If you saw those on Saturday night, yes, those came from my casa. Mi casa, yo casa. I don't know Spanish very well, obviously. All right, so one of the things before we get into, I'm not even going to do a big news of the week thing, but one of the things I've been kind of laughing about is we're such in a politically, you know, charged environment, and, you know, what's political and what's not political. You know, and I talk about a lot of different things, but I've always said, when I talk about things, it's not about being in the red states or the blue states. It's all about the green. It's all about the moolah. So that's what we're going to focus on this program. We're not going to go down any rabbit holes or rabbit paths. We're going to stick to what we know. And this is all brought to you, this segment brought to you by Kenny Blaine Auctions. They're your full-service auction service offering the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Go to KennyBlaineAuctions.com. And Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Like Law Group at 812-323-8300. And if you need a new roof, do what I did. Give Steve's Roofing and Sheet Metal a call. They're your local professional to have a high-level quality of service unmatched by the competition. They do it all. Give them a call at 812-824-3006 or online at stevesroofingco.com. Follow them on Facebook as well. All right, before we get to where we stand on things now, which is really important as we get into the second half of the year, you know, as the new quarter begins, we look back on an eventful second quarter for households and investors, a quarter which brought the economy a mighty hit. But at the same time, the market soared. So complying with stay-at-home orders, Americans abruptly cut back on discretionary spending, traveling, commuting, right? We all did, right? But I've been spending money on other things, carry out and other things at home. It seems like there's always something to spend money on at home. But this all resulted in a dire scenario for some industries. Now, unemployment rose as business revenue declined. Fundamental economic indicators saw big swings. And on one trading day, oil prices actually collapsed into negative territory. Homes began and became easier to finance, although transactions declined, and the Fed made proactive moves to try and foster a bit more economic stability. While Main Street quieted, all of us did, Wall Street rallied, sensing an economic rebound might be starting. But then, what's to come? The rally that started in late March continued in the second quarter. The market was encouraged by better-than-expected earnings in certain industries, not all. Positive news about potential COVID-19 treatments and vaccines occurred. And the comments of the Fed saying, hey, turbulence in the economy and the markets is here, but we're here to help out. And then all three of the big major benchmarks recorded their best quarters of the century. The NASDAQ, S&P, Dow, all of them, best quarter of the century. Now, as this quarter starts, everyone starts wondering, is the worst of the recession now behind us? I mean, the quick answer would be yes. The third quarter might bring some signals that we're looking at a bounce back, but it could also bring a reversal of some momentum. If states continue to halt or reverse phases of opening, which we're seeing, for the markets to climb higher off of its quarter two melt up, as many call it, earnings and economic indicators have to keep showing improvement or at least some stability. Now, the same goes for COVID-19 case accounts. If they keep going up this summer, you know, I'd say the market could be held back somewhat. But it all comes to jobs, jobs, jobs. That's all what it comes down to, because if people have jobs and they have confidence, they will spend. And 70% of GDP is based on, yes, you and I spending moolah. So the ultimate measure of economic recovery in the U.S. is for Americans to have jobs. Now, last week, we got an upbeat report in three different perspectives. One, ADP, which is the automatic data processing. It's a national employment report that comes out. Reported that private sector employers added 2.3 million jobs in June. An update on jobless claims showed that 1.43 million jobs claims were applied for, slightly higher than estimates. And then the June employment report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that 4.8 million jobs were added. So all of that adding up to an unemployment rate falling to 11.1%. Both of those numbers were better than expected. So the employment numbers painted a mostly positive picture, but it's important to remember that June, the wave of rehiring was prior to the increase in the COVID-19 cases, which could cause some states to revisit their reopening plans and also revisit if employers are going to hire people back. So with that said, the next phase is, where do we stand today? When we come back, we'll get Rod Holloway on to talk about where we stand today on the economy, the market, interest rates, the election, and what are some of the wild cards still out there. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, Hot Rod Holloway, who calls into the glass in the afternoon show on Mondays and Big Show Friday to give you a bookend report on what's happening in the stock market. And one thing I wanted to do, Rod, was talk about where we stand now. And I had you review some of my notes prior to the program today. And as we talk about the economy, you know, we believe that the second quarter 2020 will represent the low point in the COVID-19 self-induced economic coma, to say the least. And positive growth will likely return in the second half of this year. But based on economic stimulus from Congress and the Federal Reserve, we see somewhat of a U-shaped recovery occurring. But that doesn't take place until maybe even late 2022, maybe even into 2023, to fully regain the pre-virus aggregate GDP that we saw before. Now, continued fiscal and monetary stimulus, in fact, I mean, the spigot's wide open, folks. I mean, money is flowing when needed. Equity and credit markets can perform pretty good during these times. Now, Rod, I'm just talking about where we stand today, and I think that kind of adequately states where we stand today on the economy.
Yeah, I think it most certainly does, and especially from the standpoint of what can truly be accurately assessed. I mean, that's a big part of what I have talked with Glass about really since the economic shutdown and then the begin phase reopening, which is the future is very cloudy. So we don't know. We have expectations of what we think will happen and how it will go. But the reality is we don't even have history to make educated guesses off of, because we have never had anything like this happen in the history of our economy. Yes, we've had other pandemics. Yes, we've had other recessions. We have never had a pandemic cause a recession due to a forced shutdown of the economy. So while people are forward looking and making their best guesstimates, it is just that. It is a guesstimate that probably won't turn out to be very accurate. Hopefully it goes much better than what the predictions are, but that just isn't known. And until we really get deeper and further into the reopening and can begin to really evaluate the psychology of the consumer, you know, how much are they coming back? In the early stages, it seems as though the consumer is most certainly bouncing back. But of course, you eventually hit a point in time to where the people who are on unemployment will also have to be called back to work for that consumption part of the economy, which we know is so important to our economy, to continue moving forward.
Well, later in the program, I'm going to talk about, you know, what if you get riffed? What if you get not called back because maybe you're middle management and that group of people working from home, maybe they're becoming more efficient, and we're going to talk about what are some of the decisions you have to make if that happens to you. As we move into the equity markets, I mean, we believe where we stand today, the equity markets could be setting up well for the year ahead based on some economic and corporate earnings recoveries. But like Rod said, the future is really still foggy. But one thing does not foggy is lower interest rates, continued monetary stimulus from the Fed. So we believe fair targets on the S&P probably, I mean, we're not, this is not our camp. We don't like to say, oh, we think we're going to be this or that. But when we look at our partners and the people we trust and, you know, and talk with, you know, maybe 3,300 by the end of this year, that's not unfair, 2020. And then maybe even, you know, 3,600 by one year from now. And I remember when this all first started, Rob, we went back and looked at all the previous pandemics, and from the start of the pandemic to when they called it over, every single time, I think but one or two, the market was higher than when it was when it started. So we're still believing that that's going to be the case. But risk to stocks in the year ahead obviously includes spiking virus cases. We could have a Democratic sweep in November. That would always be disruptive anytime you have a massive change in leadership. And obviously the deteriorating U.S.-China trade relations. So that's where we stand today on the U.S. markets. Anything to add to that?
Not other than like I've been saying for a while, in the near term, it is going to be driven a lot by the technical patterns within the market. And as I've been saying, I think we're kind of setting up this trading range between 3,000 and a little over 3,200, which was the high point of this rally that we hit, I think 3,223. And that's kind of where we're at. We're kind of in the middle of that, maybe slightly to the upside of the middle point of that. But I think as long as the future is as cloudy as it is, that's probably where you're going to be, is just bouncing around in a channel for a little while until we get some more clarity. Hopefully that clarity is positive news versus negative news, but it could go either direction.
The other thing we've talked much about for a really long time, and this goes all the way back to 2008 and 9 when folks said, oh my gosh, interest rates are so low, they can't go any lower, they're going to have to go up some point. And we've been in this low for long camps for a decade. And I kept referring to Japan saying, listen, they've been in a low interest rate environment for 25 years. What makes you think that we won't be in the same situation? And here we stand today at lower for longer interest rate environment continues to be the narrative, where short-term rates remain close to zero for the foreseeable future, which should prove beneficial for the economy and asset valuations. So basically, if interest rates are low, it kind of gives you the permission to buy up other assets, if that makes any sense. And we see treasuries, the curve remaining positively sloped, which is good, with the 10-year kind of in the range of 0.6 to 1.25. That's what Eric has been telling me, and I believe that's probably a nice range. We don't see the Fed policy venturing into necessarily negative interest rates. They don't say they want to go there. You and I were talking today with a client, Rod, that you said you could see the market rates on a very short-term basis potentially going into the negative area. But the bottom line is we're in an interest rate environment where we are low for a long time.
Yeah, most certainly. One, I don't think the Fed sees any value in creating any sort of economic growth or stability by moving into negative rates, as far as them moving rates into the negative side. Yeah, and the lower for longer, I mean, part of the reason that you get stuck in the lower for longer camp is because if you begin to raise rates and you raise them too quick, you choke off the growth that the economy has going. So you're always going to move a little bit slow and try not to choke that off. Well, guess what? Eventually, the economic cycle takes a turn. You are not in growth mode all the time forever in economic cycles. So that's been the part of the problem. Just like the last time rates started to rise, people started predicting, you know, 3, 3.5, mm-hmm. we're going to get back to 4%. Then we kind of hit a bit of a bump in the road in the economy. And then, of course, then we hit a pandemic that was much more than a bump in the road in the economy. And then lo and behold, we sent interest rates even lower than what they were coming out of the financial crisis. So that is that that situation, and Erica spoke a lot about it with us from the standpoint of how do you ever get back to normalized rates once you set yourself up in the environment that we have set ourselves up in? And it is going to be extremely difficult to ever get back there, as you just alluded to. For the equity side, for capital, that's a positive thing. For your savers, for people who are trying to generate income in retirement, it's not a positive thing to have such low interest rates.
Well, and we're having to be very creative. I mean, you and I were talking today about all these different structured notes and different ways to generate extra income. But when you start stretching for yield, folks, then you also move into areas that you may not understand. You might move into areas of risk that you don't completely understand. And that's why many of these products that have been developed by financial institutions are synthetic in nature, and they aren't available to the retail investors. So you have to go through some type of a registered investment advisor or some kind of a professional money manager to access these, Rod. But there are amazing products being created out there. If you understand them, and that's what our job is, to vet them, understand them before we bring them out, because we have a big-time responsibility and liability before we talk about it and use them. But the financial services industry is resilient. I mean, they always figure out a way to bring out something that entices you or solves a problem. And this time is no different, is it?
Yeah, most certainly isn't. There are no free lunches. So if the yield or the income seems excessively high compared to treasury rates, well, you better dive into it, because you're either taking on some serious risk or you have some form of another trade-off. So, you know, not that we're going to get into the details of the product that you and I were discussing earlier, because we're not at that stage to do it. But part of the trade-off there is they're going to give you some more income in lieu of potential appreciation that you may achieve if you didn't take that income. So, yeah, there's always a trade-off, and you just have to be aware there are no free lunches in the markets, whether it's fixed income, equity, combination of the two, or whatever, and just really dive in and don't buy blindly simply because you want a high interest payment off of that product and you fall for that and go, oh, okay, this is great, thinking there isn't a trade-off or a risk that comes with it.
I just had a conversation with a brand new client. He came on and he was making an election whether to take a lump sum from his pension or take the pension from his employer. And he decided to take the lump sum, but still do an annuity-style product to get the same benefits that he would have with his pension. And so I was talking about this product that had this, you know, first pension benefit, a 6% bonus and a 5% guaranteed roll-up and 5% guarantee for life. And if there's a dollar left in the contract, his wife gets all the money put in. And he's like, my gosh, that sounds great. And I said, yeah, it sounds terrific. But remember, it's not too good to be true. It's too good to be free. This thing's going to cost you about 4% a year to own it. So you're right. There's never a free lunch. You need to dig down under the hood to understand exactly what you're getting and what the trade-offs are. Let's talk about, you know, I could go through credit markets and international stocks. But one of the things we have been avoiding, even though it's been tempting, is to really take a heavy position in the international sector, because most developed and emerging market economies are experiencing historically brutal levels of contraction. A case for international stocks remains based on improving virus trends in Europe and Asia, a large dose of monetary stimulus, and potentially recovery to above pre-virus growth rates in developed and emerging markets during 2021. That's all very, very enticing, Rob. But you and I have been kicking this back and forth, and we're not completely sold on that.
No, we aren't. There's no doubt that valuations are compelling internationally. They are low. But if you really look at where those economies were at prior to the virus kicking in globally, their economies were sputtering already. So they had issues that needed to be resolved regardless. So once again, similar to what we talked about with these other products, no one understands what's going on. So don't simply blindly buy because valuations are low, because there may be a good reason valuations are low. It may be because growth is extremely low and there's not a lot there. And then when you look at what is working within the stock market right now, it's pretty tech heavy. Well, guess what? If you're looking in the international world, there is not an abundance of tech opportunities internationally, especially in the developed international markets. A lot of tech that comes outside of the United States comes a bit more from Asia, and most most of those countries are considered emerging markets. So you're not necessarily getting at the sweet spot of what is really working from a earnings and revenue growth perspective by jumping internationally unless you dive potentially into that emerging markets, which obviously takes on a whole nother set of risks when you start looking at that area. And yes, I know it's hard to believe China, the second largest economy in the world, is still labeled an emerging market. I don't know how that happens, but I'm not the guy who gets to make that decision.
Yeah, right. We have labels for all kinds of things. And then lastly, Rod, where we stand today on the wild cards. You know, potential wild cards include the development of a vaccine or a treatment for this virus, evolving trends in the COVID-19 infections, and recovery rates. That's really important, and we're seeing that right now, that a lot of infections are occurring younger people, so we're not seeing as many hospitalizations and ICUs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the numbers are the numbers, and I you get to the point where, do you really even believe the numbers, or you just, I don't know. I mean, it's just, I think people are very, very skeptical right now of everything. And then the status of the election coming up in November. I mean, the polls are pointing one way, grassroots are pointing the other way. So there's a lot of wild cards out there for the remainder of 2020. Any wild cards that I missed?
No, I think you hit most of them. And obviously, there's always the potential black swans, which are things that that you can't predict and you never dreamed would happen that could potentially happen. But cross our fingers and hope we don't get nailed with two black swans in one year, because there's no doubt this virus is most certainly was a black swan.
I was early on in this whole thing, you know, as I was just really raw through the last 3 or 4 months, you know, as raw as I've ever been on the radio. I'm not sure if it's age, confidence, or stupidity. I have no idea what it was, but I was like, you know what? Sometimes you feel like you get kicked in the groin and kneed in the face, and that would be two black swan events. Hopefully, we've just been kicked in the groin and we haven't been thrown in the ditch or kneed in the face, and that would be a blessing at this point. So, Hot Rod, we appreciate you as always. Great job, and we'll listen to you for Glass in the Afternoon on Big Show Friday.
That sounds good, Dave. Have a great rest of the show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, thanks, man. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about company downsizing, and not necessarily around here because we're hearing about hiring with talent and all that kind of stuff, but you never know. I mean, people at any stage can say, you know what? We're going through some different times, and we're sort of going to reboot and reevaluate because, yeah, we're in this to make a profit, and we see maybe some areas that we could cut, we could downsize in. What if you're proposed an idea of a buyout through the downsizing? Maybe it's with the college. Maybe it's with the school. It could be anywhere, because this is an entirely new world that we're living in, and all these folks are staying at home and working from home. Maybe we don't need these big buildings anymore. I mean, there's just so many things that we can sort of think about and maybe project that could happen or could not happen. But I want to talk about, basically, if this happens to you, what are some things you need to understand when it comes to 401ks and IRAs and different rules out there? So we'll be right back, talk about some real practical things that might affect you. You never know. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, there's a lot of change in life, right? And we call it discontinuous change when things happen when you never expected it. One thing we get a lot of is people getting pension buyout offers all the time. They come in, hey, they're offering to buy my pension out for this amount of money. And usually when they're offering this to you, it's probably not in your best interest, just generally speaking. Now, that being said, with interest rates so low and maybe even going lower, these buyouts are monstrous. So they're saying to you, okay, listen, with interest rates at 1% and 2%, it's going to take a lot of money in our pension fund to pay you this income for the rest of you and your spouse's life. So we'll give you this big amount of cash just to walk away and take it off of our table. So we're starting to see some of these offers make some sense. So if you have an option to take a lump sum or continue to take your pension, give us a shout, because we have a really quick evaluation process that we can walk you through, and it has to do with a lot of different things with your age, your health, if you're married or single, all that kind of stuff comes into play. And then we can, other assets as well, like how do other assets play into it, and give you a quick evaluation on a pension buyout. And if you'd like for us to do that, it's completely complimentary at cfci.us. Just contact us. We'll hook you up and get that done. Now, let's say that you're offered a buyout and they say, okay, we're going to pay your health insurance. We'll give you 3 months' salary, whatever it might be, and you are maybe 60 or 55 or 56 years old. What do you do? Understand that 401ks and IRAs are different. What are some of the differences? Number one, with a 401k, if you terminate in the year you turn 55 or later, you can access those funds without any 10% penalty. If you roll that money into an IRA, you have to wait until you're 59 and a half before you can take penalty-free withdrawals. So many people make a huge mistake. They'll retire or get, you know, RIFed or whatever at 57 or 58, and they immediately do what people immediately do. I'll just roll it all out to an IRA. I would say tap the brakes on that. Take a look at what kind of income do you need for the next couple of years until you get to 59 and a half. Keep that money in the 401k and then possibly roll the rest to the IRA, depending on your situation, of course. The other reason that you might want to roll to an IRA is controlling your tax withholdings. Typically in a 401k, they have one withholding, 20%, and many of them won't withhold state. In an IRA, you can say withhold 12, 15, 22, 100%, whatever you want, and withhold state tax as well. And also investment options. You know, your investment options open up whenever you move into an IRA. But with that usually comes some increased expenses, and we'll talk about that in just a second. The other thing is you cannot borrow against an IRA. You can against a 401k. So if you're in a situation where you might want to borrow money from your 401k, which, by the way, has been increased now to $100,000 or up to 100% up to $100,000 from your 401k. It used to be $50,000. During the COVID and all the CARES Act and all that, they've increased that, just giving you access to capital without any penalties. You can borrow against your 401k, pay that back, usually over a five-year period of time or sometimes longer if it's used for houses and different things like that, but you cannot borrow against an IRA. Now, let's go back to the investment options. When you talk about investment options, usually within your 401k, you have, you know, limited options, but they're usually pretty broad and give you pretty much everything you need. Versus an IRA that gives you everything that's out there in the world, some of the things like Rod and I have talked about as well. So let's think about retirement. Can you adequately build a retirement income strategy within your 401k? To be perfectly frank, I haven't seen one 401k that I believe can do it effectively without moving outside of that world, those constraints. That's one. But once you move out of the 401k, depending on the size of the 401k, if you're with a small employer, probably isn't a big difference. And in fact, you probably could be cheaper in your IRA than the 401k. But if you're with a big employer, they beat those fees down so low that it's difficult from a fee comparison to say, yeah, it makes sense. But is it all about the fees? I don't think so. You need to understand fee sensitivity versus fee consciousness. Now, fee consciousness means that I understand what my fee is, and I know what I'm getting for it. Fee sensitive is saying, oh, I'm going to go where this is the cheapest. Fee consciousness says, okay, I understand that I'm going to pay a little extra for someone to watch the hen house for me, to build a retirement income plan for me, to manage my tax planning, to do all this. And I always say, but are you willing to pay an advisory fee so you don't have to worry about things? Have someone monitor things for you, make appropriate changes if necessary, and foresee, this is the key, foresee obstacles coming and help you avoid them. A few years ago, people would say, why would you ever buy a bond? Interest rates are going up. You're going to get slammed. I'm like, how do you know? We based this on what we needed to do when we needed to do it. And guess what? Nothing has happened but rates go down. So you see obstacles and you avoid them. Most importantly, getting reports on a regular basis that's designed for you. How am I doing? You know, I pay people to monitor my credit, my home security, watch my kid when he was young, insure my house, cars, life. I pay people for all kinds of things. I even pay a coach to help guide me in life and business. Isn't it worth 1% or less to have manageable assets handled all for you and all this other stuff that I talk about? If not, then you're fee sensitive, not fee conscious. Lastly, even if you don't think you want to have a coach or an advisor, and I consider myself both, think about your spouse. Now, does my wife want to deal with all this stuff? Am I the person dealing with it? My husband doesn't. Like my assistant Angela at the office, she handles everything related to money in her household. Her husband doesn't even know how much the car payment is or the house payment or who their insurance is with. She handles it all. He's not engaged. And many other spouses are that way. One spouse handles it all. So don't wait to have your spouse make a decision to get a coach or an advisor. Do it now at whatever level you want for now to plan for the future. That's just a message of today on what happens if you have discontinuous change. Prepare for the times that you don't have a chance to prepare for. I'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So did it throw you when I said I had a coach? You were like, you have a coach? What are you talking about? You might think, coach, you have a coach? I think about professional athletes. They all have coaches. What makes me so good that I don't think I need a coach? I actually have a couple coaches. I have Ed Slott, who you all know is my coach on important retirement issues and taxation and the awareness of new rules that come out. And I have a business coach on how to be a better advisor, a better husband, father, friend, an employer. So yes, I think it's important that you have a coach. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign that you recognize that you're not at the top of your game. You think about Brady, or you think about Manning, you think about Tiger Woods. I mean, they all have coaches, right? So yeah, I have a coach and I'm proud of it, and I pay him every single month. And just like I was talking about paying an advisor, he has opened my eyes and my mind to areas that I just hadn't thought about going down, which has made me a better this and that and the other, all of it. And it also makes you recognize, what are the things you're really good at? What are the things you're not so good at? How do you delegate? How do you trust? And then you move on. And it makes your life so much happier. So just like having an advisor, I think for most people, they are willing to pay, you know, that percentage fee or whatever it might be to have someone monitor things, report to them, help them stay out of the crosshairs of different things down the road. All of that comes at a price, but are you cognitive of what that price is and what you're getting for it? And value is only a perception, right? Cost is only an issue in the absence of value. Why did when I was driving down Walnut Street coming to work, is the Starbucks line out so far? I was like, who would wait in line for that? Well, there's obviously a perceived value in getting a Starbucks. At the same time, the McDonald's line was pretty short, and I kind of like McDonald's coffee, so I just pulled into McDonald's, you know? So it didn't matter to me. That wasn't a value to me, but cost is only an issue in the absence of value. Understand the value. All right, so let's talk about some other items for consideration if you get downsized is health insurance. Health insurance typically is offered to you if you get downsized or RIFed for 18 months and sometimes 36 months if there's other issues going on through what's called COBRA. And basically, you pick up the entire expense that your employer was paying for you. Many of you are paying for health insurance, but you're not even paying close to what the actual cost is. You're going to pick that up, but you get to keep your coverage. But then what about prior to 65? So let's say you're 62, you get it for 18 months. Now I have a bridge to get me to 65. There's options to bridge you to Medicare to 65, but most of them will not cover pre-existing conditions. Unless you go on the marketplace, which is, you know, going to be very costly, many people, you know, look for the cheaper option. So if you have, I talked to someone earlier who has some procedures coming up. I said, listen, get everything done before February, because in February, you know, you're going to need to go on these bridge plans for about 4 months. And for that 4 months, you can either go to the marketplace and pay, you know, this amount of money, or you can buy one of these plans to pay that amount of money, which is about, you know, $300 or $400 less per month. So get everything done while you can. Some may pay for your health insurance when they let you go or allow you to stay on their plan if they can legally. So these are just things you have to keep your eyes open for. So if you run across a situation where you're being, you know, told, hey, we're going to let you go, or here's an option to buy you out, or here's a pension option, or whatever it might be, please, please do not make that decision on your own. It's very important to have people that do it all the time. All right, we're going to take another quick break, come back. We got two more segments to cram in, about 10 minutes or less. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, a lot of times when people are proposed a change that maybe they didn't count on, and they can maybe pick up a side hustle to pick up a little bit of money, that can really help supplement the gap. I can tell you exactly what you need to earn for how long to fill the gap. And that happens all the time. Someone says, what if I left today? How much would I need to earn? You're going to need to earn $25,000 for the next 4 years, then you're going to be fine. We have a really cool software program that lays it all out for you. So a lot of people who might be making $100,000, $150,000 a year, all of a sudden are told, hey, guess what? You're gone. and I'm like 58 or 59. You're like, shoot, this was my heyday years. Well, you know what? You can probably find something else somewhere else. Maybe not making as much money, but maybe making enough to survive and letting your other assets grow, and maybe you're going to have to work a little bit longer. You never know. But if this happens to you, don't just fold your tent and, you know, go into Mopeville. Pick up the phone and call someone and say, hey, I know you guys have dealt with this before. I'd like for you to walk me through this. Now, and also building your bucket investment plan. What are the guaranteed forms of income? What are my life insurance options out there? What are some alternative ideas to increase my income? I mean, there's just so many things when you're not in that world that you don't know about, getting with someone that does it every day. Hedging strategies, taxes. This is complicated stuff. I mean, I can't believe that anyone would want to attempt some of this on their own, no matter how smart you are or think you are. And it's not about accumulating assets. It's all about how you get the money out of your plan. That's where the rubber meets the road. You didn't really need me or anyone else to tell you you needed to save 10% to 15% of your pay, don't spend more than you make, and try to be out of debt before retirement. That's easy stuff, right? The hard stuff was like raising your kids, and, you know, sticking out the career that you're in, whatever it might be. But now it comes time where you're like, okay, I've got this money. Now what? Like, how do I coordinate this with my Social Security, my spouse's Social Security? Maybe I have a little bit of a pension. When do I take that? When do I do this? How do I invest this to make sure my money does that? I mean, it is a very, very touchy thing, and you need to have someone that does it every day. When I come back, I'm going to tell you a story about someone that did something every single day that might absolutely drive this story home. I'll be right back. Try to wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, let's talk about this story called Who Packs Your Parachute? It's a true story about a guy named Charlie Plump. Charlie Plump was a U.S. Navy jet pilot in Vietnam. After 75 combat missions, his plane was destroyed by a surface-to-air missile. Plump ejected, parachuted into enemy hands. He was captured, spent 6 years in communist Vietnamese prison. He survived the ordeal, and now he's a lecturer on lessons learned from that experience. Now, here's the story. One day, Plump and his wife were sitting in a restaurant, and a man at another table came up and said, hey, you're Plump. You flew fighter jets over Vietnam from an aircraft carrier called the Kitty Hawk, and you were shot down. Plump said, how in the world do you know that? The guy said, I was the one that packed your parachute. So Plump, like, and in gratitude and surprise, the man pumped, you know, his hand and said, I guess it worked. And Plump assured him, it sure did. If your chute hadn't worked, you wouldn't be here today. Plump couldn't sleep that night thinking about that man. Plump said, I kept wondering what he might have looked like in a Navy uniform, a white hat, a bib, in the back of a bell-bottom trouser outfit. I wondered how many times I might have seen him and not even said, hey, good morning, how you doing, or anything, because, you see, I was a fighter pilot, and he was just a sailor. So Plump thought about the man hours after the sailor had spent on this long wooden table in the bows of the ship, carefully weaving in its shrouds and folding the silk of each chute, holding his hands each time, the fate of someone he didn't know. Now, the question is, who's packing your parachute? Now, Plump asked his audience, who's packing your parachute? Everyone has someone who provides what they need to make it through the day. Plump also points out that he needed to have many kinds of parachutes when his plane was shot down over enemy territory. He needed his physical parachute. He needed his mental parachute, his emotional parachute, and lastly, his spiritual parachute. He called on all three of, or all of these to support himself before reaching safety. So sometimes in the daily challenges of life that give us, we miss what is really important. We may fail to say hello, please, or thank you, congratulate someone on something wonderful that has happened to them, give them a compliment, or just do something nice for no reason at all. So as you go through this next week, this month, this year, or the rest of this year, recognize the people who pack your parachute. It means a lot. I felt this story would be good to share with all of you because this story presents to me how important people are. And regardless of the rank or hierarchy or where you think you are in life, everybody needs someone who's packing their parachute. So with that, folks, I'm going to give you an early departure because I am out of time. I hope everyone has a fantastic week. Find out who's packing your parachute tell them thank you, because we need this. You know, in Plum's case, you know, he needed his parachute once, but this guy, he packed parachutes every day. And that's what I tell people in our business. You retire, and I had this repeated to me today. This gentleman, he's a new client, he said, you know, David, I heard you say this, and it resonates with me. He said, you retire once, we do it for people every day. And we've been doing it for 26 years. So find someone who's been packing a parachute consistently. Don't try to pack your own parachute. Can you imagine what Plump would have felt like had he had that morning to say, here, pack your parachute? And he's like, first time I've ever done this. And then, boom, he gets shot down over enemy lines, and he's in captivity for 6 years. You know, he had to pull on his resolve of all of these things. Whoever gave him that, helped him with that mental toughness or the spiritual aspect of things or whatever it might be, to pull him out of that doldrum into, you know, where he is today, which is a motivational speaker. So hope you enjoyed that story. Hope everyone have a great week. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.